Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the French presidential elections and speak with Philippe Mallière, an expert on the French Socialist Party, whose candidate, François Hollande, appears to have won the election and has vowed to change the direction of France away from the austerity policies that have crippled Europe. Then we will speak with a former CIA officer who broke with the agency over torture and has written a book about his experience of using enhanced interrogation against alleged Al-Qaeda terrorists, The Interrogator, and Education. Glenn Kyle joins us to discuss the terrorism trial at Guantanamo just underway, where defense attorneys say they are not allowed to discuss torture with their clients. Then finally, we'll speak about the growing inequality in America that Mitt Romney's biggest donor and former partner at Bain Capital says is a sign that our economy is working and that a little more inequality would be good for the 99%. Chuck Collins, the co-founder with Bill Gates Sr. of Wealth for the Common Good, joins us. He has a new book, 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. Joining us now is Philippe Mallière, a professor of French and European politics at University College London. In 2007, he was awarded the Marcel Liebman Chair in Political Science by the Université Libre de Bruxelles. His main publications are about the French Socialist Party, French politics, and European social democracy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Philippe Mallière.
Hello there.
And you're about to head off to the BBC, where you'll be covering the elections live as they come in, although preliminary results are in. We're speaking before we broadcast, so we have some preliminary results. Could you give them to us?
Yes, I can give them to you. I think the first exit polls are good for Hollande. Apparently, he is the victor, and I think the margin between the two candidates is such that I don't think Sarkozy will be able to catch up. I think that as we speak today, which is about there's still an hour to go before the closure of polling stations, it's about 53% against 47, which means, in actual terms, several million votes separating the two. So I think it's we don't know about the actual result, yes, in terms of percentage, but we know that it's going to be a Hollande victory.
And there's no way in the last hour that he can close that gap, do you think?
No, because again, the gap between the two candidates is such that it'd be absolutely unbelievable for him to close now on this. So I think really we can safely announce that Hollande will be the next French president.
And that is the first socialist president for what, 17 years?
Since 1988, following François Mitterrand's re-election, yes, they lost all the subsequent elections, so it's an election every 5 years now. And so I think, yes, it's an important election, not only for the Socialist Party, but also for France and possibly for Europe, because one can expect some changes in terms of political orientations.
So let's talk about, Philippe Mallière, the race emigration factor, because there was an expectation that, first of all, some time back, Sarkozy said there were too many foreigners in France. And as you know, the far-right candidate, Marine Le Pen, essentially ran on an anti-immigrant ticket. Is this to say then that the French have proven themselves to be less xenophobic than some analysts had predicted?
Possibly. That's possibly an explanation to it, because there was an important televised debate on Wednesday. You know, it was the only debate of the campaign. And Sarkozy, toward the end of it, tried really to play this sort of race-religious card, attacking very much, very strongly Hollande on his proposal to give the right to vote to non-EU immigrants to France. Basically, when you say that in France, it's implicit, but one refers to essentially immigration coming from North Africa. So it was, of course, an attempt, and commentators are of that view in France, or most of them, that it was an attempt to scare people by linking, you know, immigration from North Africa, Islam, and a possibility of what the French call a communitarian vote. That is, a vote not along your sort of traditional political lines, left and right, but along, you know, religious or ethnic lines. And I think that doesn't seem to have paid off, because clearly National Front voters, you know, you're reminded that their candidate, Marine Le Pen, got almost 18% of the share of the vote. I think essentially we shall see how they voted, but I think essentially I expect a very strong abstention amongst them. And the rest, of course, a small majority going to Sarkozy, but also some going to Hollande. So in the end, this hard right rhetoric on immigration, on also the sort of trying to scare the voters about, you know, the possibility of a kind of communitarian vote in France if Hollande is elected, because he will be the kind of candidate sort of favoring some this immigrant population. That doesn't seem to have paid off.
Well, it is, I suppose, surprising in a way that it's not that long ago since the March shooting in Toulouse by the Islamic extremist, which was so brutal and obviously captivated the nation's attention. I should think if something happened here in the United States that close to an election, it would have an effect, and it doesn't look like it had an effect.
No, and I think the media and commentators like myself were, of course, wondering whether that could impact on the vote. And I think, of course, we waited a few days following the killing in Toulouse. And in fact, that doesn't seem again to have had an impact or in effect. Clearly, the socioeconomic situation is so serious in Europe and notably in France that people were really wanted the main candidate to discuss those issues, and not, they didn't want to be distracted by it. This isn't to say that they were not shocked and appalled by what happened, but they, I think, on the whole, understood that what happened was the act of an isolated person, a madman in a way. So I think overall it could have played in the hands of Sarkozy, Le Pen. I don't think that had a real effect. If you look at the motivations given by notably working-class voters who voted for Marine Le Pen, they, of course, they mention immigration, of course, they mention law and order, of course, they mention a question of insecurity, but overall what they mention alongside other voters is that questions of unemployment, question of wages, and so on and so forth. So in the end, it was, if you like, a kind of old-fashioned election, you know, with the left and right, very polarized, extremely polarized elections. It's the most polarized elections that I can remember since the 1980s, with the left, with the right, with also, in the left, a double choice. You know, you had the moderate social democrat, Hollande, who is the victor, and also to his left, you had the rise of Jean-Luc Mélenchon for the left front, which is, of course, a more radical option for voters, which has proved also successful, 11% of the share of the vote. So for all these reasons, I think, even the most tragic and most shocking events, such as the Toulouse killing, didn't impact on the campaign.
Again, I'm speaking with Philippe Malliere, a professor of French and European politics at the University College London. In 2007, he was awarded the Marcel Liebman Chair in Political Science by the Université Libre de Bruxelles. His main publications are about the French Socialist Party, French politics, and European social democracy. And we're discussing the French elections, which look like they're breaking, although the polls haven't closed yet, they'll close soon, they're breaking about 53% for Hollande against 47% for Sarkozy. It would seem, Philippe, that the other candidates in this race have really helped Hollande. You've got Bayrou, the centrist, to the right of Hollande, and then you've got, as you mentioned, Jean-Luc Mélenchon to the left. If you combine their votes, that's obviously a big help. And conversely, Marine Le Pen said she was going to cast a blank ballot, and she called on her supporters to vote according to their conscience. So that's hardly an endorsement for Sarkozy.
No, Sarkozy has ended up, I would say, I started the campaign very much isolated politically, and he's also finishing the campaign very much isolated. So he's failed, if you like, to unite the nation around him, which is normally, and I think it's something similar in U.S. Election, you need, if you want to stand a chance to get elected, to unite the nation. If you don't do that, of course, it's very difficult. And I think the failure of Sarkozy has been to come across, to look like, although he was the incumbent president, to look like a man who could unite the nation. And he's failed that, in my opinion, because he led a campaign which was far too much on the right, you know, trying to appeal to National Front voters. That was his strategy from the start, and it was, in fact, strengthened after the first round. I think that was a big mistake, because in France, you really need to occupy the center ground if you want to stand a chance. Of course, in the first round, if you're a conservative candidate, you try to appeal more to the voters of your side. But in the second round, and that's what Hollande did very well, you are not too much on the left or too much on the right, because you need to appeal the more centrist, the voters, the voters who, for instance, switch allegiance from one election to the other. And you mentioned François Bayrou, who, by the way, got almost 10% of the share of the vote. He's a true centrist in France. But centrism doesn't mean above left and right, because, again, in France, you can't really escape the classification left and right. And when you say centrism in France, it tends to lean to the right, to its center-right. So it was a big thing for a man who belongs to the center-right, who in the 1990s had participated in several right-wing governments, to say, well, I'm not going to vote for Sarkozy. He's too right-wing. I don't like his flirt with the FN. It's very dangerous for our country. I don't like what he says about immigration. I don't like what he says about law and order. It's far too much for me. I'm going to vote personally for Hollande. So I think it was a very important thing. Did it play an important part in this in the last day of the election? Did it really impact on the way people voted today? I don't think so, because his party, again, was very split on this issue. I think some of them finally opted for Sarkozy, others for Hollande, followed Bayrou, but some abstained. You know, it's what it shows above all is that candidates do not own their votes. You know, it's people have different agendas. You can vote for the same candidate, but for different reasons, and that shows every time. So you need for each election really to study carefully how voters voted. You know, and it's in the case of Bayrou, I think it will be a split vote again.
So, Philippe Mallier, for the longest time, I've been covering the euro crisis here in the United States, and many analysts have wondered why it is that the eurozone and the leaders, particularly Merkel and Sarkozy, could not get their hands around the problem. And as you know, it's gone on for 2 years, and the longer they dither and delay, the worse it gets in terms of the situation in Greece and in Spain and in Portugal and in Ireland and in Italy. And there's always been this notion here, since we're in this critical election year here in the United States, that President Obama's fate, election fate in this year, is in the hands of Angela Merkel. In other words, if the eurozone crashes, it would affect the global economy, and Obama is going to be elected on the strength of the U.S. economy, which is sort of teetering at the moment, slightly better news, but not good enough news, etc. So let's talk about what you think the impact of this election is going to be on this overarching kind of looming problem that I've alluded to.
Well, it seems that the whole of world politics is in the hands of Angela Merkel, in a way, because what you say about Obama is even more true in the case of European nations, you know, European governments, because, of course, and you feel that so strongly when you are in Europe, the fate of European economies seems to be, you know, entirely linked to or tied up to what will do or won't do Angela Merkel. Sarkozy, that was also one of the reproaches which Hollande made to him during the Wednesday debate. He said, "Well, you pretended that you were an important actor in the crisis alongside Merkel. In fact, that's not true. She really did what she wanted to, and not in the interest of France and in Europe." Sarkozy found it very hard to reply to that. So in a way, what's going to happen, I was reading before our interview the latest news coming from Paris, and in the socialist circles, there's already a telephone call arranged for tonight between the two leaders, that is Hollande and Merkel. You might say, fair enough, that's what statesmen do when one is elected. You know, they call to congratulate. But I think there's more to it, because Hollande is very keen to act decisively and quickly. He wants to be in touch with Merkel personally, but then he wants immediately to sort of look forward to the next European summit to put forward his own proposals for Europe. And essentially, they seem to go completely against the current course of action, which has been, as I said, dictated by Germany to a very large extent. So expect some changes, notably expect a challenge. And what we don't know yet is the strength of that challenge, a challenge to the austerity policies which have been launched and for a while in Europe and which are proving extremely unpopular. As we talk, there is another European election which is extremely important taking place today, which is in Greece, where you have on the one hand a coalition of the radical left, which would apparently, according to the latest poll, weigh more than 30% of the vote. That is communist, Trotskyist, and on the far right, also an important rise of the far right, in a country which didn't know any far right before. And the two main parties, the conservative New Democracy and the PASOK, the Social Democratic Party, are in complete disarray. So that sends another signal about how the anger at the moment in Europe against these policies. And the main parties, conservatives on the right and social democrats on the left, get sanctioned, the one after the other. So that's why for Hollande, I think he knows that, and he can't, as soon as he's elected, to say, well, we won't do anything or very little. He's got to do something. In France, he will have received, notably, the final result is 53 or more against 47 or less against Sarkozy. He will have received a popular mandate to do that, because that's what people expect. The mood in France is that austerity policies do not work. They inflict unnecessary suffering on people's lives. It's not by simply cutting spending and also blaming public services that the situation is going to get any better. So the thing is really, let's talk now about growth. Let's talk about wages, because for an economy to restart, one needs to do that first. It's not that Hollande will neglect the public deficit. No one neglects that. But it's the way you want to sort the question of public deficit. Now the issue will be different. So let's wait now when Hollande goes to Berlin, when they meet with Merkel. Of course, she won't be pleased, because she's the main resistance to that change in Europe. But now it's a question of political environment, and it is changing. It is changing very fast. Greece, France, Netherlands, the government also fell a few days ago on the same question. The conservatives in power in Britain also lost the municipal election, the local election last Thursday, and they lost it for the same reason. So the situation is very volatile, and I think these are very interesting times at the moment in Europe.
Well, Philippe Marlier, I think there's an overriding connection here with also what's happening here in the United States is that it's almost a case of economic illiteracy and an attempt to prove John Maynard Keynes wrong, when all the evidence over the decades has been that he's absolutely right, and that the last thing you do when you have an economic downturn is have austerity policies. All they do is deepen the problem, deepen the debt, and make the situation worse. And we have the very same situation here, that the conservatives, the Republicans, are insisting on austerity. They've blocked almost all of Obama's attempts to stimulate the economy. And our economy would be in so much better shape, and so would Obama's political fortunes, if indeed we were adopting stimulus policies. But instead, because the Republicans control the House, they're blocking any attempt to stimulate the economy. It's almost as if they want the economy to be bad so that they'll get reelected.
I can't agree more with you, and I see that it's fascinating that the same mistakes are made both sides of the Atlantic. But I think what is quite telling and interesting, what I just called a few moments ago, it is interesting because for the first time in a long time, you see, and that starts from Europe, a popular movement. You know, not the usual suspects, I would say, the more politicized people in left-wing groupings, you know, which in some countries such as the UK are fairly easy to dismiss. No, it is really people, you know, normal voters, people who are not overtly political, and you see that, you know, in interviews, you see that on TV, you see that, you know, if you go on and read blogs, people are really fed up with these policies, and that's the real change there. And you see a kind of political class on the center left and right, really, you know, completely taken by surprise because it's a very recent movement. Although some you could have guessed, you know, it's been a long time coming. And I think that really we reached the point where clearly something has to give, and what has to change, in my view, is probably the course of action in terms of policies. I think Merkel in Germany has already hinted at some changes, you know, because she's got herself an election pretty soon in Germany, and she sees that even the so-called German miracle, well, it's not really a miracle when you study the German situation, you know, in terms of spending power, wages, public protection, you know, social protection, sorry, the Germans are not so well off in the end. You know, they lost a lot of the safety net they used to have until 10 years ago. So they're not even happy in Germany either. So don't think, you know, that the situation in Europe, there's a sort of European way, you know, based upon austerity policies. We really cut and cut and cut. And we hope that, you know, within a number of years, everything will be back to normal. I don't think it works. It's been tried essentially in Europe for the past 2 to 3 years, and the situation is getting worse. More and more unemployment, and finally, as you were saying earlier, you know, there's no, if you cut and cut and cut, if there's no boost to the economy, no, people can't spend. Of course, the recession gets deeper. So it's a vicious circle, and as you say, well, finally, cancer wasn't wrong, you know, and those who tried to prove him wrong, I think, failed.
Well, just in closing, Philippe Mallier, what are the chances then of Hollande's policies being enacted? He's promising to raise taxes on big corporations and people earning more than €1 million a year, and he wants to raise the minimum wage. He also wants to hire 60,000 more teachers and lower the retirement age from 62 to 60 for some workers. Of course, all of these things would be unheard of over here in the United States. But, you know, people are lucky to get 2 weeks vacation instead of the 6 weeks that Europeans get, et cetera. That's a long conversation, but for another day. But what are the chances of enacting some of these policies?
Well, surprisingly enough, for the American audience, the very measures you've just mentioned, I think there's a fairly good chance for them to be enacted in the fairly, you know, in the next 1, 2, 3 years. It's a 5-year term, by the way. You will have to act very quickly. Why is it possible? Because I think that for the French, I think it's not seen as something really extraordinary. I think that's the bare minimum for a lot of people. When you know, when you could say, for instance, the taxation 75%, but it's for people earning over €1 million. How many people in France earn €1 million? Very few. So that doesn't really that won't really concern many people. The sort of the changes also on pension, you know, retirement at 60, it's for people who have worked 41.5 years. So it's essentially people who have started their working life very early. You know, so these are not, if you like, general universal reforms. So they are, for a French electorate, probably quite moderate.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Philippe Mallier.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Philippe Mallier, a professor of French and European politics at the University College London. In 2007, he was awarded the Marcel Liebman Chair in Political Science by the Université Libre de Bruxelles. His main publications are about the French Socialist Party, French politics, and European social democracy. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with a former CIA officer who broke with the agency over the torture issue, and we'll be talking about the Guantanamo trials.
Laissez le bon temps rouler. Laissez le bon temps rouler.